It might surprise some people that calling Mary the Mother of God is not an optional devotional title. It is rather a statement of a dogma, that is, a divinely revealed truth which we are bound to believe. Perhaps it seems strange that this is a dogma, since Mary is not God. Why would we be bound to believe something about her with as much certainty as Christ's divinity? The answer is, because if Christ is who we believe him to be, two natures united in the divine person of the Son of God, then Mary must be the Mother of God, and to deny the one is to deny the other. This is why Mary was defined as the Mother of God, or God-bearer, Theotokos in Greek, in the Council of Ephesus in 431. This ecumenical council did not meet primarily to settle a question about Mary, but about Christ. The Bishop of Constantinople at the time, Nestorius, taught that Christ was a union of two persons, divine and human, rather than a union of the two natures in the one person of the Son. And seeing correctly that if this were the case, Mary's relation to Christ changed, he said that she should only be called Mother of Christ, Christ-bearer, Christotokos in Greek. This teaching of Nestorius was problematic for several reasons. First of all, the evidence of the Gospels and the apostolic tradition clearly taught that Christ was a unity, and when he spoke, it was always the Son of God speaking. Secondly, it's hard to see in what a union of two distinct persons could consist. What higher principle was the cause of such a unity? Could they really be said to be one in any relevant sense? And in what way could it be said that the Son of God actually assumed our human nature if there was this strict separation between the persons and the natures? Thus, in order to be faithful to God's self-revelation, the Council condemned this understanding of Christ, since it endangered the proper understanding of who he was and our redemption. Christ was a personal unity, not a loose union which would have functioned with a split personality. The divine person assumed the human nature and acted as an integral person, exercising power by means of the two natures. Mary is as closely related to Christ in theology as she is in life, and to change Christ's identity affects how we understand and address Mary. If the one born to her was, from the moment of conception, a divine person, then she is called the mother of that person. Of course, we make distinctions in theology, and in response to simplistic and sometimes bad faith objections, we acknowledge that obviously she is not the source or principle or cause in any way of the divine nature of Christ, or that the divine person began to exist in her womb. Of course not. God is eternal and pre-existed Mary from all eternity. But it also is not correct to say that Mary is just the mother of Christ's humanity, because mothers don't give birth to abstract natures, nor do we even say that they give birth to individual human natures. Mothers give birth to persons, and there was no human personhood of Christ, only divine personhood. This is not mere wordplay. It makes a huge difference whether we say that Mary was just used to make a human nature that was later joined to God, or, on the other hand, that she carried within herself and gave birth to a divine person. To unnecessarily and falsely divide Christ's identity so as to avoid an honorific title for Mary seems a bit backwards. Why not praise the wonderful working of God in accomplishing so great a miracle as to elevate one of our own race to the level of being the mother of our own God? Why not say with the poet Wordsworth in his poem The Virgin, "Woman, above all women glorified, our tainted nature's solitary boast"? Of course, the Church always bases the teaching of her ecumenical councils on the evidence of divine revelation. And besides the overwhelming proof from Scripture that shows us who Christ is as a divine person with two natures, and thus who Mary must be in relation to him, we can even see Mary referred to as the Mother of God in the first chapter of Luke's Gospel, when Elizabeth says, "And whence is this to me, that the Mother of my Lord should come to me?" Did Mary in her humility refuse such a lofty title? No. In fact, she responded with one of the most beautiful praises of God in all of Scripture, the Magnificat. She says that all generations will call me blessed. And that is what the Church does when we honor her with the title of Mother of God. There are other dogmas of Mary that we will consider in their own place, her perpetual virginity, her immaculate conception, and her assumption, but all of them have their root in her divine maternity. It was in view of her being the Mother of God that she was, by a special grace, preserved from all sin from her conception. And because of her being the God-bearer, she was kept pure and untouched her whole life. And due to her holiness and purity, her Son did not allow her body to see corruption at death. All too often, non-Catholics and even some Catholics criticize the honor and veneration we pay to Mary, saying that praying to and honoring Mary with various titles is akin to worship. But to think that prayer and honor is the same as worship reveals one's ignorance of in what true worship really consists, because the act of worship par excellence is the holy sacrifice of the Mass. Hence, to a Protestant, and unfortunately even some Catholics, Saying prayers to Mary and the saints looks like worship because their worship is so impoverished without the true act of adoration instituted by Christ, which is the Mass.